Hello and welcome to Series 2 of The Heart of Teaching. My name is Aoife Lynham. I'm a teacher, educator and researcher in Hibernia College, and today I'm delighted to welcome Clara Fiorentini to our podcast. Clara is a lecturer in initial teacher education and early childhood education, and she has taught for 10 years in an urban Desh primary school in Dublin. She runs the Little Miss Teacher blog and is also one half of the Literacy Channel. She's a PhD candidate at Trinity College Dublin and is currently researching language and literacy development in the early years. So today Clara's here to talk about our love of all things literacy. So Clara, thank you so much for being with me today. So to start off, maybe you'll tell us all a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so I was a teacher for 11 years. I taught in Dunleary in County Dublin. I am now actually a lecturer in education in Merino Institute of Education, and I'm working here in the English department, but I also do a lot of work in the early childhood department as well for play-based learning and literacy. I'm from Donegal originally, but I've been living in Dublin now for, about 15 years. So I still got my accent, but I'm very much a Donegal woman at heart. But Dublin is definitely my home.
Yeah, you're a little bit like me, so a blow into Dublin. I'm a blow into Dublin for about 10 years. I haven't got the 15 years. I think I'm about 10 years there myself. So tell me about, I suppose, you're doing a lot of work with student teachers, and you've mentioned about the early years and things like that. Was there a teacher that inspired you along the way to get to where you are now?
Yeah, well, I suppose it's a little bit cliche for me in the respect that a lot of my family are teachers. Both my parents and numerous aunts and uncles are teachers too. I went to my mum's primary school. She was my teacher in fifth and sixth class. And I suppose it wasn't until I became a teacher myself that I really appreciated what a great teacher my mum was. And I have memories as a little girl, you know, maybe mum had to go somewhere and I was dropped off at dad's school, and he was a French teacher, and he had what I thought was a really cool classroom. It was the language lab. It was room 101, the language lab, and it was a classroom with, you know, you had tape players in the desks, and, you know, everybody had headphones on, and I thought, wow, this is so cool. I didn't think, you know, teachers did things like this. And I went to school in France for a couple of months when I was a little girl, because of dad's French teaching. We did an exchange, and it was just so different to the primary school that I was in. Now, don't get me wrong, the primary school that I went to in Glengad in North Donegal was absolutely amazing, was definitely way ahead of its time. I just remember the teachers were always so happy. They had a great camaraderie, and it was very obvious that they all cared so much about the children. But when I went to school in France, it was so different because there were no books, there was no handwriting. Even though the children were slightly older than me, it was all playful. It was all play-based learning. There was toys everywhere. There was two levels. There was a mezzanine level in the classroom. There was bikes and scooters and trucks and all sorts of things in the yard at lunchtime. All sorts of risky play, climbing over old cars and running through flower beds and things. It was incredible. And then to go back to North Donegal, back to our prefabs, it was so, so strange. But I remember that whole thing of the playful learning, and I remember the teachers were very much involved. There was lots of teachers in the classroom, and I found that so interesting. And I remember then myself as a student teacher being like, God, wouldn't it be great if there was more of us in the room for the amount of children that were there. I remember as well my secondary school English teacher for I think it was first, second and third year was definitely the teacher that probably stood out the most to me, Mr. Donnelly, because he just had a way of leaving the room as soon as he opened the pages of the book. I was in the midst of probably quite challenging classes, but he had a way of just, you know, taking control of the room through the book. And like whenever he would start reading, he would leave and the characters from Dancing at Lunasa would appear in the room, and nobody was following the pages. We were just following his face and following his expressions. And he gave us so much time for creative writing. It was just wonderful. And he let us write, you know, and it still all went towards our junior cert, but it really channeled everybody's creativity. And I still I'm impacted by the way that he taught us. It was great. And I meet him and, you know, he's like, are you still teaching? I thought you were going to write. But I'm trying to explain to him that I can still write and teach at the same time.
That's interesting. Yeah. Because even when what you're describing sounds very similar to two experiences I had. Just what you were talking there, you know, I had a teacher in secondary school as well. Mr. McKenna was his name. And kind of like that, just when he came into the classroom, when he read, when he talked about novels or books, or when he encouraged us to write, that was one of the really, really big things. I remember one time him taking an essay that I had written and reading it out for the class, and I'm still, I feel chuffed about it now. And it's amazing that I was a teenager at that stage, but it was still really impactful when teachers do things like that. And when you're talking about going to France, I had a similar 1 year experience where my parents took us all off to Cyprus for a year, and we lived in Cyprus for a year. So I'm very conscious, I suppose, of things like inclusion. And I really love what you do with your literacy channel. And I know recently you've created resources on inclusion. Could you tell us a little bit about how we go about creating an inclusive class? Because when I think back to my year in Cyprus, I remember that they all had this beautiful tanned skin, and there I was, like as white as a ghost, coming in. We actually, I must try and find the class photo from that year, because I'm nearly shining out. I'm so white. And, you know, it was such a strange, it's like turning things on its head now when we think of the Black Lives Movement, but I was the one who was the odd one out. And it's something that I suppose we don't often feel in Ireland. And how do we create those kind of inclusive classrooms through using books?
Yeah, well, we need to really think about the class, you know, that's in front of us on a year-to-year basis, and that our library, you know, it's not a static thing. And I know myself as a child, I was the child who had the funny name. And, you know, it came to a point, you know, where I was nearly embarrassed of my name at times. Now I'm so proud of it as, you know, as an adult. And I got, you know, proud of it as I grew up and I realized that I was being silly. And it's great to be unique and have a lovely, unique name. But I think it's really important that, you know, we're valuing each child in the class and valuing the experiences that they've taken with them. And, you know, our books can be a great way of creating the inclusive classroom. Even if we were to go back this year and just have a look at what, you know, what's on our shelves and the type of text, are they actually representative of the children that are reading them? Or do they, you know, everybody deserves the feeling to be, you know, included and to feel represented in their class. And if we even are to think of a lot of our textbooks and the resources that we're using, are the children seeing themselves represented? You know, are they seeing their skin color? Are they seeing, you know, are we learning about the countries that they're from and the language that we're using surrounding them as well? And it's just, it's so easy to source picture books. It's so easy to even find read-alouds online or to learn about the stories that the children, you know, read in their heritage languages. And it's really, you know, it's easy now as well to find versions of stories, you know, even the Gruffalo, things that we use all the time. And we can be a little bit snobby with our books sometimes and, you know, shun off the ones that the, you know, that are popular, but they're still brilliant. And we shouldn't always have to be trying to find the most abstract of texts as well. And sometimes if it's a book that the children enjoy, make sure that everybody can enjoy it and maybe, you know, find the versions that are in Spanish or find the versions that are in Polish. And the libraries, we have such a great library system in Ireland as well. And they're really wonderful for helping source books for the schools too. And we need to utilize that a lot more.
No, I agree with you. And it can be challenging because you also might have children in your class that don't really like reading all that much. So I know you talk a lot about encouraging a love of reading. And how do you go about that in your own classroom?
Well, it's impossible to encourage a love of reading, I think, for the children if they don't see that you love reading. Mm-hmm. There's a little rhyme that I have that I'm always chanting off to my BEDs and to my early childhood students. It's when you read and the little ones see, it shows you enjoy, and that's the key. And like, they need to see that you enjoy reading. They need to see, you know, that you get lost in the book and that there's that magic and that we can all laugh. We can all, you know, feel sorry for characters. We can all be empathetic. But we also need to find out what the children are interested in, because we can all have our own favorites in books and, you know, try and impart that favorite book onto the children, but they don't necessarily get it, or they don't necessarily respond to it the same way as you. You need to use their interests to help you choose their books. And I think it's really important to let them laugh with books. And a great way of getting the children actually interested and motivated in reading is to find humorous texts. And, you know, there's nothing better than sitting back and laughing with the children from cover to end, because that laughter and that warm, fuzzy feeling that you get from laughing together about a book and embracing the silliness of a book as the teacher as well, because sometimes we can get very caught up in the seriousness and, you know, getting things done. And that laughing invites them to want to read again and again. And that's half the battle, I think. Mm-hmm. And then also rereading. We don't reread books enough. You know, when we find a text that the children love, especially the picture books, read it again. And if they ask you to read it again and again. My poor husband is tortured at the moment with Barry the Fish with Fingers. And he's like,
I've actually just ordered that for my son. So I have high expectations because I've seen you online saying how great it is. So I'm really excited for it to arrive.
Simple text, but it's one of those stories that it's great for emergent reading, because even though obviously Luke is only two, he can't read himself, but he can turn the pages. And because we reread it so many times, there's certain words like crash when the big crit comes down, and oh no, and the language is coming out because we're letting them reread it again and again. And it's just, it's that emergent reading right before your eyes, you're seeing it happening. So Russell is not allowed to hide the book, he has to keep reading it again and again.
Yeah, there's my little one-year-old, I have to say, you know, because obviously I've taught junior infants, but I'd never taught a one-year-old, you know, about reading and things like that. So now with my little guy, we have a book, and I suppose I've been reading to him since he was born. I've been just kind of going along and kind of seeing how, and he's nearly like my little guinea pig at this stage. Yeah. And there's one book that he laughs at, and I find that really funny because I didn't expect a little like one-year-old to be laughing. Yeah. I Just Ate My Friend, and I remember when it arrived, it's by Heidi McKinnon, and it's this little monster who's like, I just ate my friend. And it's really funny because it's all about impulse control. It's like this little character that goes around, he's devastated because he's after eating his friend, and he's like, oh, I'll never find another friend again. And then he finds another friend, and then the other friend eats him, and it's just really funny and it's really silly. And kind of when you're saying that, I'm like, it really is amazing the impact that these kind of books have. And even as young as one, we can see it happening, and that laughter is a great suggestion.
Yeah, and they associate the laughter with positive experiences, and then if that positive experience is associated with reading, then you're on to a winner, because they're going to want to do it again and again. And I just thought of something there in terms of like making an inclusive reading environment in the classroom. It's all about, you know, the books that let the children understand, but also help them to feel understood as well. Like everybody deserves to have a book that makes them feel a little bit more understood in the world and that they can relate to. There's nothing better than picking up a book and you fully resonate with the character. And a lot of us have had that experience of a book as a child that you've picked up and you're like, oh my God, she's got the same name as me, or, you know, something as simple as that.
Lovely. And in terms of, you've mentioned there your BEds and your early childhood students, are there any books that you always say, you know, you really should read this as you're progressing through, you know, your teacher training? Are there any books that you think are just vital for student teachers?
In terms of, like, I have several texts that I feel that help you as a teacher, which I'll explain in a little minute. But in terms, there's some picture books that I really feel that every teacher needs to read. There's one called The Invisible Boy by Trudy Ludwig, and it's all about Brian, and he's basically the little invisible boy in the classroom. And there's two certain pages at the start of the book where it looks at, you know, the teacher very subtly, and it talks about even the teacher didn't notice Brian, or even Brian was invisible to the teacher because such and such was swinging out of the lights and something else was happening over here. And we can all be guilty of that sometimes, of forgetting about the children who are quiet and the children who are plodding along in the middle and who aren't making the most noise. They're getting their work done, but they often go unnoticed. And I just feel like it's one of those really powerful books that really points out your role as a teacher in terms of, you need to, you know, consider everybody, and don't forget about your reliables in the middle as well, because they deserve your attention as much, you know, as the others who might be a little bit better at getting your attention. And I just, mm-hmm. it's one of those books, every time I read it, it's almost a little bit emotional, and it definitely pulls at your heartstrings as a teacher, and it probably reminds you of students that you maybe could have made a better effort with. And I think starting off in your teaching career, that's a really great one to look at. I also would really recommend After the Fall by Dan Sandat. So that's it's basically what happens to Humpty Dumpty after he falls off the wall. And I just think it's a great text in terms of showing you that accidents or things that happen to you don't define you. And it's just mm-hmm. the same as a bad day teaching. We've all had those days, you know, where we think, oh my God, is this job for me? Or I didn't do that well, or that day was an absolute disaster. Mm-hmm. Nothing went to plan on the lesson plan, especially as a student teacher.
Absolutely, yeah. It's the hardest time, actually. Being a student teacher is much harder than, I think, when you're actually in the classroom yourself, yeah.
Yeah, and how you often get on your placements mm-hmm. doesn't always reflect how you will actually be as a teacher, you know, when you have your own class. And it's so difficult stepping into somebody else's classroom mm. and having to, and it's generally in the middle of the year when the other teacher has, you know, got their routines and everything in order.
Yeah.
So those would be two in terms of picture books. And I also... One more actually picture book would be The Crocodile Who Didn't Like Water. And it's such a simple little text, but it's a story I use again and again with the student teachers and my early childhood educators, because it's a great one of, you know, reminding you that, you know, just because you're not the same as everybody else, it doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with you. And, you know, channeling your individuality is a great thing. And also it's one of those ones that has great little subtle illustrations to make you kind of think outside the box a little bit as well. And it's not a picture book that has won any prizes or is, you know, any way magnificent in terms of the plot or anything, but it's just a great way of showing that sometimes the most simple picture books are often the ones that can hold the most learning for children.
Mm-hmm.
And then I suppose there's two texts that I have to mention. Mary Roach's Developing Critical Thinking Through Picture Books.
Oh, it's just amazing. Yeah, it's fabulous. They do. It has to be. It is a must that, yeah.
And I don't know what I was doing recently, but I came across an article of Mary's about when she was talking about her PhD research and, you know, creating the dialogic classroom. And mm-hmm. I'm sure if you search Mary Roach dialogic teaching, it'll come up. And it's just so interesting about how we can all, you know, through our career, we can continue to progress and, you know, assess our teaching and how we can make our classrooms a more interactive and dialogic space. It's just fabulous. And then another one, which is, it's actually written for parents, but it's brilliant for teachers too, is Jim Treleese's Read Aloud Handbook. And he's on to the 8th edition of it, but it's really, it's written in a really nice way. It's got some fabulous pointers for reading aloud to children, and it's definitely one that I would recommend having in your armory of books.
Brilliant, that is so helpful. And I suppose your blog that you have, you're, you know, you're online and you have your blog as well, and on social media you're very busy, and that's what, you even have given me great tips on different books that I can get for my little guy. And I suppose, where did this come from? Where did your blog start, and where, because you have such a passion for literacy, it really comes through. And I think that's why you have such a large following, because people see your passion, they learn a huge amount from you. Where did you get the idea to start this blog?
Well, thank you. Firstly, that's lovely to hear. I've always enjoyed writing. I've always enjoyed being creative. And a couple of years into my teaching, I decided to go back and do the master's in children's literature in DCU. And I remember seeing it advertised on the wall in the quad. If you've gone to PATS, there's a quad area, and they used to have different notice boards for different degrees and things. And I always thought, I'm going to go back and do that for myself, because it sounds, you know, right up my street, children's literature. And it's, you know, it's not, I thought, nothing really to do with teaching. It's just a subject that I'm really passionate about. And I did that, and there were so many wonderful modules in that on different elements of children's literature. But we also had a creative writing module with Siobhan Parkinson, who was the children's laureate at the time. Mm-hmm. And we had an option to do our dissertation as a creative writing piece. And I kind of always regretted not doing that. But however, the master's came to an end anyway. And during it, somebody had mentioned, I think it was Siobhan actually, you know, that, you know, when you have an interest in writing, you know that you can blog. And I didn't even know what a blog was at that stage. And a couple of months had passed and I was kind of like getting to that point where I'm like, oh, I'd like, you know, I have a desire to do something else, or, you know, and I had done lots of different courses in journalism and writing on the sideline, just little part-time courses. And I thought, oh, sure, I'll get this blog thing and go. And I didn't intend it really to be what it is now. And I, at that stage as well, I had been very comfortable at the senior end of the school. I had fourth class for 2 years and I had sixth class for 4 years and no experience at the junior end at all. And our principal came and he asked, you know, he said, I have a favor to ask you and I'd love you to go down to the junior end of the school. And I nearly had a heart attack, but, you know, maybe me. I was like, okay.
Well, I think when you are used to the senior end, it is a big shock to the system when you go down there to the junior end. All right.
And I suppose I started the Instagram page, I started the blog, and I was kind of just documenting my journey, I suppose, with the different things I was trying out in playful learning and literacy at the junior end. And it just kind of went from there. And I love it. I wish I had a lot more time, obviously, to share more on the actual website. I do what I can, maybe get one or two posts up a month if I'm lucky. But the nice thing about Instagram is that it's short and it's snappy and it's now, and it's a great place to interact with fellow teachers. And there's actually a really lovely Irish, you know, teacher gram, I suppose, sphere at the moment. And I've met so many lovely teachers and educators from all parts of the country through the blog and through Instagram alone. And it's so nice.
It is. And I think it's a great way to share really good practice. I think there's a lot of learning that goes on and a lot of sharing. And I think it's a really lovely space to be in. In terms of Ashter and things like that, can you tell me maybe about, you know, maybe your favorite Ashter lesson or your Ashter structured play that you had set up that you would love to share with people?
So many different things, but
I know it's a hard to pick one.
I think the thing that I'm drawn to the most through the Ashter is the socio-dramatic play, because I just feel it's the one area where you can incorporate so many different parts of your curricular learning. And I think that's one of the things that we can get too caught up in at times, is that, you know, that Ashter is this other subject that we have to do on top of the curriculum. But, you know, it's not. It's a way that we can facilitate so much of our curricular learning through Ashter and through the playful learning. And once we overcome that and we get over the idea that it's not just all about setting up this perfect, you know, Pinterest-looking play and gathering resources. Like, I had a conversation with one of the teachers on the forum of our summer course last night about, you know, gathering materials and I don't know where to start and so on. And sometimes the children actually need very little to just get on with the play, because play is what they naturally do. And the more you drop in the resources, the more the play is extended. And we don't need to overwhelm them with too much, because they've already got the skill for playing. It's just how we extend it and extend learning. But I just find that regardless of what the theme was, whatever was going on with the socio-dramatic play was always kind of the hub of our theme, or the hub of the learning, and everything kind of stemmed from there, be it, you know, the doctor's surgery or the airport. But I think one of my favorites was, we used to do the coffee shop. So we had Junior's Costa. There's a great
fantastic.
I cannot remember what it's called now, but you can go on and you can like edit the logo of any famous brand. So there's a Costa really close to the school that I used to teach in. So we obviously thought that would be the best coffee shop to go for. And the teachers in the staff room, we were great coffee drinkers, so they used to, you know, throw the cups in any problem, and we'd load the cups in, and the children used to love it. And then we one of the best things about it then, so we prepare and we do all the learning about the coffee shop and how we take our turns and the money and the cost and ordering all our different things. And then at the end of the month, we went on a trip to a coffee shop and they got their little baby Chino. And
fantastic.
It just contextualizes so much of the real life learning. And then when you see them, you know that their little orders are turning into, you know, from squiggles on the page to actually taking somebody's name or trying to spell coffee or even writing tea just as the letter T. It's just those little light bulb moments, and that's the most wonderful thing about the play. And then when you can just get involved in it as well and get off the periphery and forget about, you know, I suppose monitoring it and actually getting involved with them and using your experiences as the adult who's been to the coffee shop and can do all these things. Mm-hmm. And then you'll see that their little previous experiences from being to the coffee shop with mum or dad, or, you know, ordering things, you'll see all the different language coming out. And, you know, mom asks for marshmallows and her chai latte and things like this. And it's lovely. It's just brilliant. I couldn't imagine a day in the infant class now without Asher. Mm-hmm. And that's great, I think.
No, it's great. And I think there'll only just be more and more of that play-based learning as the curriculum develops. And you, I don't know how you do it, to be honest, Clara, because you were saying there you'd love to write more in your blogs. But from what I can see, you're always online, you're always sharing, you're doing your PhD, you are, you know, lecturing, you have a little boy that you're looking after. So there's a lot going on. So you also have the literacy channel.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that and how people can access it.
Yeah, so I have to point out, I'm only one half of the literacy channel. I share the literacy channel with my colleague, Jennifer Sullivan.
So, yeah, and she's in Trinity, isn't she?
She's here. We share an office in Marino.
And Marino. Oh, sorry, apologies. I thought she was Trinity. Okay, she's in Marino as well. Great.
Yeah, we're two parts of the English department here in Marino. And yeah, so it's great. Like, because we share an office and we share the Sounds Like Phonics program as well. We do a lot of work together, and this has been something lovely that's come out of our, you know, relationship with colleagues as well. So we set up the YouTube channel actually during lockdown, and we had been involved in a lovely little project with Trinity on emergent literacy at home during the lockdown period. And then we decided to make some more and set up our own channel. So the first few that went up were really to help with literacy and the distance learning. And we had, you know, like literacy at the beach and how, you know, teachers or parents can find lots of lovely learning opportunities and literacy opportunities through the beach. We've got one about environmental print, and it's all, you know, really purposeful, easy to facilitate literacy learning opportunities for teachers. And generally with each video that we put up, then we've got a full downloadable resource to help you then with whatever it is we've been talking about. And we just released another one yesterday, and it is all about texts for diversity and inclusion from infants right up to six. So within it's a different video because it's not you know, the usual approach that we would have followed with, you know, guiding you through ideas. This is actually walking you through a presentation that we've made with lots of different picture books. And then we've embedded links to read alouds and resources online as well. And we also, in the downloadable resource, it's not on the actual YouTube video, but in the downloadable resource, we've also included a link to the GBook program, which is something, it's like a European project with DCU that Jennifer's husband Keith was actually involved in, and it's got a huge database of absolutely fantastic texts that can be used for all sorts of inclusive learning and diversity and so on. So it's definitely worth checking out.
No, it really is. I think it's an absolutely fantastic resource for teachers. I think it's wonderful. I think it's a great thing to have kind of nearly a one-stop shop for all this kind of stuff. And the fact that you can download the downloadable resources and everything, I think it's great. So I think there's wonderful work being done there. So I'm sure people are very, very grateful to you for that. So I mentioned as well that you're doing your PhD. Can you tell us a little bit about the area that you're researching? I'm sure we can probably guess.
Yeah, so I'm extremely interested in the, obviously, the early years and early literacy. So I'm looking at how children approach formal literacy learning. And in Ireland, I think we can get a little bit caught up in jumping straight into formal literacy. Áine Creaghan, sorry, describes it as we're preoccupied with the written word. And we forget sometimes that oral language is the prerequisite for the reading and writing. The children have to have a significant level of oral language and vocabulary before we can actually expect them to fully engage with formal reading and writing. And because of the various programs and textbooks that we've been using over the past couple of decades, we've fallen into habits where we rush to reading and we don't really give the children enough time to actually talk and get comfortable in school before we, you know, basically land them with all this formal sequence. And it's also seeping into the early years as well. And I suppose we've got social media and Pinterest and things to blame a little bit, because we see all these lovely ideas of things, you know, that look great, but they aren't necessarily pedagogically sound or suit the learners at hand. So I'm looking at the transition from the final year of preschool and the first year of primary school, and basically how we can work on oral language before progressing on to formal literacy learning, and how it basically we can nurture oral language in that transition period to set the children up as best as possible for engaging with formal literacy learning. I think
that sounds really interesting. No, that sounds really interesting, and we'll be looking forward to reading and hearing more about that. So just, I suppose, before we come to the end, if I have one more question for you, and then I'm going to do a quick fire round.
Okay.
So if I could give you a magic wand and you had one wish for education in Ireland, what would you like to change?
Oh, that is a tricky question.
Not even change, maybe even just something you'd like to introduce, because I suppose where my mind was going is I was thinking when you talked earlier about being in France and there were no books and things like that. Yeah. And is that something you'd like to change maybe?
Yeah, I'd like to see a lot more play and a lot more time for play. And, you know, I get a little bit anxious sometimes when I see play being boxed into this ASTER hour now. And ASTER is incredible. It's an incredible framework, and it's done so much for learning, especially at the junior end of primary school. But I just think we need a lot more of it throughout school. You know, children after first or second class don't just suddenly stop playing and you know, stop learning through play. And I think those at the senior end deserve a lot more playful learning opportunities as well. I'd also love to see greater connection, you know, with the preschool settings and the primary school settings, because that transition to primary school is huge. And I think greater links between the ECE settings and junior infant classes especially would be really beneficial for the children, for the educators, you know, for the schools in general, and for the parents. And I think we've got an awful lot to learn from some of the amazing practice that happens in the early years sectors, especially for the infant end of the school. And I think, you know, if we linked up instead of working, you know, so separately, sometimes there'd be a lot more happening in tandem then. And I think relationships there would be great, because it's all about, you know, obviously developing the relationships with the children in the classroom, but we can also develop our relationships as educators as well. I think, yeah.
That's lovely. Lovely wishes. That was a very good use of the magic wand. Well done. Okay, so just the quick fire now. So we're going to get to know you a little bit better. So your favorite color?
Green.
Your favorite book for children?
Oh, dear God.
just one, I know.
Good Night, Mr. Tom.
Your favorite book that you've read just for you?
Just for me. Oh, The Shadow of the Wind by Carlos Ruiz Zafón. He just died a couple of weeks ago, but it's absolutely incredible.
Haven't read that. I'll put that on my list. Your favorite movie?
Oh, possibly The Godfather 2.
Oh, very good. Okay. I'm also a massive fan of those Godfather movies. Teacher website. What's your favorite teacher website to go to?
Well, I can't say my own.
You can say your own. It's my favorite one. So let's say your own.
I have to say Jen Jones, Hello Literacy. She's my go-to. She's incredible.
Okay, brilliant. Favorite resource? Anything. What do you love? What could you not live without when you were in the classroom?
Picture books.
Picture books. Absolutely. And the last one, I think I know the answer to this. Favorite place in Ireland?
Oh, has to be Mobile, County Donegal.
I think it is going to be Donegal. Lovely.
It's taken me 33 years to realise that, and a lockdown through a pandemic, but I was never so happy to get to sunny Mobile than I was there at the end of June.
Lovely, lovely. Well, look, thank you so much, Clara. It's been really interesting, really informative, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
Thanks so much, Aoife.